Hello and welcome to the live stream live. I am your host, Joshua Schubart, and I hope you are having a beautiful Monday. Thank you so much for being here this evening or afternoon, depending on where you are in the country or even in the world. As usual, we are sponsored by Lucas Roasting Company. They are an incredible micro batch roasting coffee company based out of Wolfboro, New Hampshire. I met them many years ago when I was on vacation there with my wife, and they make some of the most incredible coffee in the world, in my opinion. I have had coffee all over this damn planet, in Spain and all over Europe and Italy and France, and they make the best cup of coffee, hands down. It is all micro-batched, roasted to order. So when you order it, they immediately roast it, and then they immediately mail it to you. And you can get 15% off your first order with the code THELIVESTREAMLIVE. So please go check them out. It is linked underneath this video or in the link in my bio if you're watching on Instagram. And that's right, we are on Instagram, YouTube, and the Facebook Live all at the same time. If you have any questions or comments or anything at all, you can ask them and I will answer them, or my guest, Mr. Brian Michael Smith, will answer them too. As long as they're not weird and as long as they're not hypersexual, we're more than happy to answer them. So let's get right into what I've been doing and what I've been watching and what I've been feeling. My new baby is 3 weeks old, and it has been an incredible, magical ride of spit up and crying and feedings and late nights and early mornings. And my oldest is still kind of in and out with how she feels about having a younger sister. She's doing a lot better, and we had an amazing breakthrough today where we all went to bed together. We did night time together, and we just sang songs, and Fitz held Millie's hand, and it was just a really great time. So that felt really good, because she's been having a hard time with having a new baby sister who she both loves and is incredibly jealous of. So I'm sure that's going to change. It's just going to take time. And they'll be close and best friends. I'm sure they'll fight and it'll be horrible, but it's also going to be wonderful and beautiful and everything that you hope it'll be. And that's what I believe. So what have I been watching? So watching Severance. If you have not been watching season 2, you need to go onto whatever it is that you can watch it on. It is on Apple Plus, but if you can pirate that shit, just go get it. I don't care. Like, I know I'm not supposed to say that because I'm in the industry, but if you don't want to pay Apple, that's fine with me. But they don't advertise any of their shit anyway, so it's not like anyone knows where it is. But this show is probably one of the most prolific shows of now. Excuse me. Sorry. My oldest brought home some sort of like respiratory thing, and I'm at the end of it now. So if I cough or sound odd, or if I start talking fast or I get really excited, then my throat seizes, which is great. To me, like I've said in the past, this show is like Lost. There are a lot of questions, a lot of things that we don't know. Tons of crazy mystery and insanity. And if this show came out, hey, from Mongolia, thank you for being here. That's really far away. Wow. Thank you for watching. but if this show came out, like when Lost did, or if it was on a major network where it was much more easily consumed, I feel like it would be a national obsession. People will be talking about it way more than they are now, because me and my wife have all these theories, and you used to be able to just kind of like talk to people about what do you think is happening? What do you think is going on here? Now we can't do that as much, even though we should be able to do it more because of the internet. But shit. Yeah. Severance. Watch it. If you haven't watched it yet, it's awesome. And what else? Oh my God, we just watched the Florence Pugh Andrew Garfield film. God, I'm not gonna be coughing this whole time. So embarrassing. I'm so embarrassed. But it ends with time, or what's that called? I'm gonna look it up because I have the internet. Andrew Garfield film. We Live in Time. It's an A24 film. It's about a marriage, and that deals heavily with Florence Pugh's character having stage 3 ovarian cancer. They get married and they have a child, and it deals with what that means and what that looks like, and how people that are deeply in love navigate something like that. And it hits me and Courtney particularly hard. She has this thing called the ATM genetic mutation, which we wouldn't have learned about unless we used the fertility clinic to have our kids. But we had genetic testing done, and she has a genetic mutation that raises her risk of ovarian cancer by 85%. And the only way to treat it is to have a full hysterectomy. So in about a year from now, Courtney is going to have a procedure done that will remove her entire reproductive system, which we've talked about. We've talked to her gynecologist about, and she's at peace with it for now. She understands that she'd much rather be here than and help raise our kids and be with me than keep her reproductive organs and potentially die. So this movie is literally that. It's how do you navigate that? What do you do? And there was a point in the film where they made a choice to hold on to one of her ovaries so that they could have a child. And that resulted in the reemergence of her cancer later on, and she passes away. So it's incredibly well done and wonderfully acted, wonderfully written. But it also really it really hit us directly, just because of everything that we are currently dealing with. But it's a great film, and I highly recommend you seeing it. As for how I'm feeling, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling optimistic, despite all the fucking nonsense that is happening in our lives politically, and just like not even politically, just socially, and on a level that I didn't think we would have to still fight for. Just members of the LGBTQIA plus community are constantly under attack. Specifically, like trans and queer friends being erased from our country's history, it's a thing that is particularly troubling and very uncool. I don't know how else to fucking say that, but we are in a very contentious place, and a place where if we allow ourselves to be passive and to ignore what is going on, only bad things will come of it. We must write our elected officials. We must call them. We must raise awareness and champion people that are not like us, that don't look like us, that don't share the same characteristics as us. We have to. I'm specifically talking to the folks that look like me. We need to champion people that are not like us now more than ever. And that's just how I feel. That's how I'm feeling right now. It was really intense. I mean, but hey, sometimes you have to get fucking intense. So tonight I have a really great guest, probably one of the coolest people I have ever met in my life, and a person that I am very pleased to call my friend, a person who I do not speak to or see enough, but we are both working our goddamn asses off to get everything that we want to have in our lives and our careers. His name is Brian Michael Smith. You might know him from the TV show 911 Lone Star, where he plays Paul Strickland. It unfortunately just ended, but it was an incredible show. It was a show that I was happy to watch every week, not because it just had him on it, but because it was an amazing show that was a lot of fun and talked about a lot of really important shit, a lot of really great things that needed to be talked about all types of people with all creeds, religions, fucking sexualities or orientations, everything. So it was good to see. Brian has been out there killing it. He went to LA to just see what it was going to be like. And he went out there and he booked a series regular pretty much right away. And it was when you see the people that made you feel like you belong in a space win, God damn it, you win too. And it's one of those things. Brian and I met coming up in the New York acting scene. We did lots of like acting classes together, lots of workshops together. And we were grinding and hustling and just working it out. And I got on The Tick, and then a little while later, he got on 911 Lone Star. And it was just like it's like the stars aligned and shit happened the way that it was supposed to. And it's just keep still happening that way for Brian, largely because he is a positive light and a positive force. And he leaves a place in a room better when he leaves it than when he first walked in. So I'm very happy to have him here. You've seen him on 911 Lone Star. You've seen him on the new L Word Generation Q. You've seen him on our show After. He was on Queen Sugar, where he played an incredibly prolific role. Here is Brian Michael Smith. What up, man?
What's up, Josh? Man, that's so kind, brother. Thank you.
It's all true, though, man. Like, you're the bee's knees, man.
I do my best, man. I also just appreciate you, like, having this show and just how open and vulnerable you are with, you know, what's going on for you internally. I think a lot of people need to just be reminded that, like, we all have things going on, and the best way to navigate that is to, you know, do it together, you know, with community, however it is that you do it. You have to, you know, because you think you're the only one dealing with a certain kind of trouble or pain or even joy, and to be able to share it with other people, like, really, that's what it's all about. So I appreciate you for having this show, and I appreciate you for bringing me on, man.
Of course, man. I'm so happy that you came on. I'm just going to answer this question really quick. I just spent a long time talking about my wife. I am not gay. I appreciate being asked that question all the time. I'm not. I love all the gays, but I'm not one of you, but I am a huge ally. And I know why you are asking. And I appreciate the compliment, and I appreciate you being here. But but it's true. You gotta share. And that's one of the things that you've always done really well, is that you used your own story and your own life to connect with people in a way, especially during a time like when I first met you. Being transgender wasn't a thing that, like, everyone was like, woo, right? Like, I mean, now it's a whole other thing. It's like just like people being garbage dumps, but in the beginning, I'm sure that it came with some troubles and some danger, right?
In terms of talking with other people about it,
or like in terms of like being open, of just being out and like being open and not just passing.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was an interesting time, I feel like, when we met, because it was an interesting time kind of in this country's history and like our cultural history, for sure. Like, you know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s. And there wasn't even any like language, you know, to really describe kind of what I was experiencing. I didn't have any sense of identity outside of like, I think I'm different. There's something going on with me. And I don't really see anybody out in the world or like on the things that I'm ingesting. And I watched a lot of TV and movies. I was like, I just, you know, there's all kinds of stories about how other people grow up and who they become and, you know, what they experience. I'm like, I'm not seeing any of like my story. So there must just be something wrong with me. Or, you know, it took me a while to like even say like, you know, even like frame it that way. I didn't think there's anything wrong with me for a while. But then when you start getting into like your teen years, you're like, I'm this different. Maybe there is something wrong with me, or I'm just different. So I just kind of like personalized in that way. I'm one of one. What are we gonna do?
Sure.
And then when I got to high school, you know, I'm like, well, you know, I was in the conversation with my mom. So maybe you're struggling with things so much because you never really tried to just be, you know, just be a girl. And I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't really, you're right. I fought this. Maybe I'll give it a shot and see if that changes things for me. Because again, there wasn't a sense of like any other future for me, you know? So I'm like, oh, all right, I guess I'll give it a shot. So I tried, you know, from late high school into college. I'm like, well, at least when I go to college, I'll have like a whole different experience. I can just completely disconnect myself from my past. And like, no one's going to know that, you know, I'm like this boyish person that I played on the boys football team, that
right.
I have all this stuff. I can really just get up in here and really pretend to be a girl and like get away
right.
with
you,
it.
You're in the newspaper, right? Like you, mm-hmm. you played on the boys football team. I mean, you're a boy.
I mean, there was only one thing.
Yeah.
Like the boys thing, right? So I was like, I want to play real football. You know, I grew up playing tackle football, and like I just, you know, when I was in middle school, all my friends, my close like group of friends, they were on the Pee Wee League football team, and I was like, I just want to play. I love playing in the backyard. I want to play. I want to put the pads. I want to get a helmet. I want to get a number. I want the whole experience. I want to play with my friends.
Yeah.
And I begged my mom, and she was like, no, you know, you're gonna get hurt. And I'm like, please, please, please. And then she finally was like, okay, you can play. I'm like, yeah. And then that winter I broke my leg horribly.
Oh no.
Horribly. Like, I was like, of course. Like, I feel like almost immediately after she said yes, I like broke my leg. And I mean, I was in a wheelchair for months. I had to have like surgery. It was like bad. So I missed that whole window to play to play like Pee Wee League football. And then as I healed, I'm like, well, I'll just play high school football. She's like, come on, we just broke my leg. Like, what are you talking about? And then what was cool about the town that I grew up in was instead of them like fighting me or like fighting this, they were like, there's the equipment guy, go get a helmet, put the pads on, the freshmen are up there and try out.
And this, it's like, you know, this basically was in Michigan, like, right?
Ann Arbor, Michigan. The thought behind that was like, football will sort this out. Like, you go ahead, try it, which I think is the way it should be, you know? So I tried out freshman year, and I played all 4 years, and I played 2 years on varsity, and I had just a great experience of football. You know, I learned so much about myself, about like being a part of a team, about hardship and like working through challenges. And then I like would play on the girls track team, and I learned a whole different side about like character development and training and practice and like really working on perfecting something. You know, on the field, as I was a pole vaulter, and I did a lot of all the throws events. So, I mean, these being able to play sports not only connected me to like a community, but it really helped me learn about myself as like an individual and what I'm capable of and what discipline does and, you know, what structure does. So it's really unfortunate to see all these legislative attacks against like, again, kids just wanting to participate in sports when I see how valuable participating sports can be to someone. Like, it really gave me a sort of sense of what I, you know, like my own tenacity and terminity, like what I can do on my own if I really put my mind to it. And like being able to play both these sports showed me that in different ways. But, you know, long story short, by the time I got to college, I'm like, I don't feel like I'm really participating in my life.
Sure.
I don't know what the future is going to hold. And then when I really tried to picture me like at 30 years old, like down the road, I was like having a mind job. I'm like, oh, this, if I keep on this path, like this womanhood is next. Being a girl feels so unfamiliar to me. How am I supposed to know how to be a woman? Like, it just doesn't feel right. I can't picture myself in the future. And that was terrifying. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And like, you know, I was praying and I was reaching out to like God, like, God, what am I don't know. Like, is there a way for me to live? Is there a way for me to like go forward? Like, there's gotta be a way that I can move past this. I'm tired of feeling like this. I'm tired of like this sensation of knowing, like, if I keep hiding who I am, it always comes back. So it's not going anywhere. So like, what am I supposed to do? Is there a way? And it's like, you know, just kind of like lightly, yes. And I was like, what? No, not that. That's not really a thing. I've never seen anybody. No way. And I really like entertain the idea and like just the lightness and the joy at even just remotely having a possibility got me out of my feet. And like I went to the computer and I like started to like, you know, I was about to say Google thing. I didn't, there was no Google at the time.
Yeah, was it like AltaVista or whatever it was? Jeeves,
like Jeeves, like is this really a thing? And yeah. It's like I found Jameson Green's website. He's a man who wrote a book about his experience. It's called Becoming a Visible Man. And it was like, you know, his biography and just going through a story. And it was like for the first time, like reading, like, yeah, yes, yeah, that's what it was like for me. Yeah, yeah, all the way through his like 40s. And then it got to a picture of him, you know, at 40, right before he transitioned. And then, you know, the next year after he transitioned, he was just this man with a beard, like living his life, and like his eyes were just alive in such a way. And I was just like, oh my God, Derek.
Yeah.
So, you know, knowing that internally, but the way things were in the early 2000s, it was like everything was really gate kept. Everything was really medicalized. It was really hard to find community offline and get access to information. And then so much was restricted, or like you just weren't able to get like the medical care that you wanted. It was like this specialist way over here and you got to go to this part of the country for that and all this kind of stuff. But there were guys who went through it and they were sharing that information through community online. So it felt like I wasn't alone, but it was like something that we're all doing on our own, separate from larger society. So by the time I got to New York, I was like 25, I transitioned, I was like living my life. And I felt like I had a strong sense of community online, but I really wanted to be more involved with the community in real life.
Sure.
And I've been working with young people in Michigan doing media literacy and drama. I wanted to work with young people in that community. And it was one of the best things that I've done because I just personally realized like how much of a difference it would have made to have met a real trans man when I was younger.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be able to just like in the like just in the flesh, like just how relieving it is to be around
people. Meet you. So you can like meet you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And see like an adult and see an adult. As a child, to see like there is a future where if this person has a job and they have people who love them and they have a community and their whole life isn't wrapped up in this knot around this area was like such a palpable relief for myself. Like I want to do the same thing for, you know, for other people. And so I worked at the LGBT Center in Manhattan and just learned so much about the community in general. And then just the freedom and the expression of these young people when they felt safe and they had people around them who were going to let them kind of explore and, you know, figure out who they are on their own terms was like magical. You know what I mean? It was a really powerful experience for me to just to be there, but just what I was able to receive from being there. And while I was there, it seemed like the country was having its own kind of cultural awakening and awareness in general, in terms of how they were seeing and embracing LGBTQ people. You know, with the a lot of the work that HRC was doing with equality voting and legislation, and then the representation in media was starting to shift. And then right around, you know, 2012, 2013, it's like you have Laverne Cox and Orange is New Black.
Right.
You know, and her portrayal on this popular show really exposed people to like the 3D life that trans people have, you know, in a way they haven't been before. So now as I'm starting to step into my own as a person and then as an artist and looking for opportunities to share my experiences through the work, there's more actual good roles in which I can do that, you know, like now that they're looking for those good roles. Now that I've established myself as a person, I'm like embodied in myself and I feel like I know who I am. Then I started to do acting training and I felt like as an artist, I feel like I could actually do this.
When did you start doing that?
That was 2010. I was at the Yes program and I realized I'm telling these young people, like, don't ever let anybody like knock you off your path, whatever you want to do, like you can do it. Like it might be difficult, but you know, when you know what you want to do, like go for it and support it in any way that you can. I realized like, you know, I'm kind of knocked off my path. I've always wanted to act and perform.
Maybe I should do that too. Yeah.
I don't know. That's probably what I'm preaching. And like, I came to New York for that, you know, whether subconsciously or like directly. And I'm like, I'm not doing it. I'm doing acting adjacent work. This is still good work. This has meaning, but this is, I never actually really committed to it. I chose, you know, they always like juxtaposition stuff. It's like either you do arts or you do sports. And it's like, I kept picking sports, but it's like, this has always called to me and I just don't know how to do it. So don't let not knowing how to do it stop you from trying. Like, ask questions, figure it out. The same thing you're telling these kids to do, you do the same thing. I was like, you're right, okay. So I found this book written by William Messer about the actor's art and craft. And it really spoke to me. And I felt like, even though I went to college and I took acting classes and that, you know, I got a theater minor, I never really learned how to control the performance. When I read this book, like, this is the missing ingredient. This, the way the Meisner technique works is exactly what I feel like, you know, is how I want to work. And this school is here in New York, but you know, I got like middle school credits on my resume. I can't go to this school, like real actors go here. But I'm like, you know what? They have a summer program. I'm going to apply. They got the website that's in the back of the book. I'm going to apply. And if I get it, I'll continue on. If I don't, at least I took a step in that direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I ended up getting into that school. And like, that was it, you know, it showed me the path that I really wanted to go. It connected me with other people who were walking that path. So a lot of the questions that were holding me back were like answered. And I just developed more confidence in my ability and my calling. You know, I feel like this is a calling. I feel like I've been ignoring it. Now I don't have to do that. And so that's kind of what I started doing. And then by the time I finished that program in 2013, I was like, I feel ready. I want to get more established. I want to get more credits under my belt. I want to just practice being a solid actor. And then I'll figure out what kinds of stories I want to tell once I kind of get my feet on the ground. And I feel like that's around the time that new, better representation of trans characters was coming out. Now I felt like everything, all the ingredients were ready. And I felt like fully cooked. So even if there might've been a risk, it was like, I kind of have to take it because I feel like I have the capacity to do it. I feel like everything in my background has prepared me to kind of step into this work in this way. But I don't just want to be somebody who talks about what's going on in the
community. Yeah, you want to be
like,
doing it.
Yeah, you know, like it. There's people who are activists who like they organize, they, you know, march in the streets, they go to the protests. There's people who like are representatives and they get into like the legislative branches and they work that way. And it's like, well, I'm an actor and I want to use roles and I want to use storytelling to talk about what's important to me and help people kind of connect and understand what's going on. From my like experience, I want to bring
the purpose of the art form, right? That's why you do it. That's the you want to, you want people to feel.
There's this, you know, like we all in our experiences like make up the human tapestry, and it's like, well, this is part of it, and I want to sew this up. I want to add this to the quilt of humanity.
And you've done a great job. You've done a wonderful job doing this stuff, man. Like I will say, like it's very easy to just kind of like walk into some sort of like stereotypical whatever the fuck, and you haven't classically, from what I've seen, you are a very compelling human being, but every person that you have played, you have done the work and you have made them a complete human person. And while that seems very obvious and it seems like a thing that you're supposed to do, it doesn't always happen all the time, especially how trans folks were being written and like how they're being portrayed. You wouldn't get a complete person a lot of the time. So to watch you do it was really beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, something that I think I took away from my acting training was like, as an artist, like, what am I going to do with this role? Like, you can get it and you can just see what's on the page, or you can just recite what's on the page, or you can, you know, get Hamlet, or you can get Stanley Kowalski. And it's like, you have to decide, like, what am I going to do with this? Right. What am I going to bring to it from my experiences, from my background that no one else can bring to this role? And so the same thing with kind of like just being an actor in general, like what can I bring to this industry, to this art form that nobody else has, you know? So if I'm going to get a trans character, he may not be that well written on the page, but that's what I can bring to it. Like,
right.
I have to have the courage to, you know, advocate for that, understand what the story, the larger story is. And if I can be of service to that larger story while bringing some truth and some light and some authenticity to this particular role, because I know it goes beyond just this particular piece of art.
No, sure. Also, one of the things that I've always loved about you, Brian, is how tapped into the like business end of our career path. It's a thing that just like not a lot of artists can even comprehend. And one of the things that we really kind of like hooked into when we first met was that we were both like, yo, this is a business. We have to work out how the fuck to be in it. Maybe we can talk to each other about it and see what you know, and I'll share what I know. And you were one of the first people that I really was able to just kind of like chop it up with in that sense. I like to ask people this on the show that like are from this type ahead. If there's one thing, just one, that you could tell you 10 years ago, what would it be to like help you get there faster? Because what I say,
tell myself, just do smaller versions of what you want to do to completion, and you'll learn it that way, as opposed to trying to plan it all out.
That's such good advice, because you have to slowly learn and move incrementally. You can't just do it all at once, because you're not going to be like awesome at it right away, and you burn yourself the fuck out.
Right. And my thing for myself that I learned is like, if I run into my own ignorance, I'll stop, as opposed to getting the answer, because I have like a shame response to ignorance.
Right.
Like, you should just know. And it's like, well, you're not going to know until you do. When you sit down and try to plan it all out, yes, there should be some planning for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a tendency to try to plan it too much, and then you run into what you don't know, and then you diffuse. So it's like, just keep making it, and then when you run into what you don't know, ask for help, and then you'll know specifically what to ask for, because you're in the process of it, as opposed to trying to get all the answers. You know sometimes you get somebody's ear because you think that they can help you with something, and you don't exactly know what to ask, because you haven't, you know, they don't know where they can help me in the process.
Right.
So get into the process, and then it'll show you where to ask or what to ask. You know what I mean? But learn by doing, because I feel like there's been years in the last 10 years where there's things that I felt inspired to do, like the art, the moment, the something was calling to me to do or something to make. And it's like, I wouldn't finish it through. I talk myself out of it
in
the planning stages, you know, or I realize like I spent more time writing about the thing, planning the thing, talking the thing, than actually just doing the thing.
So I'm trying to reverse that thing. Like up until I made After, I was working on everyone else's stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like helping them shoot it. I was helping them produce it. I was helping them write it, blah, blah, blah. But I had all these ideas for my own things, and I would never do them like you were just saying. And it wasn't until I just kind of like ripped the Band-Aid off, and I was like, I gotta do this shit for me, you know, like I gotta do it. Because no one's gonna let me have it. I have to let myself have it. And that blew open my whole career too, because it changed my whole mindset and my whole perspective. Like it was like, no one's coming to help you. Like no one's discovering you anymore. You know, like there's too much shit. There's too much shit for people to watch. You know, like no one's James Dean anymore spinning a rope in the fucking back of a movie. And, you know, like that's not what it is. Like you have to create your own opportunities in a lot of ways, whether that's making your own show or your own short or just putting yourself out there in a way that maybe you haven't before. So, yeah, dude, that's totally right. That's totally right. Yeah. So, you weren't doing poorly here in New York, but I know that you were doing great. I mean, you were getting on the New York shows. You're on Blue Bloods here. You get a nice little recurring role on that show, a nice cop man that would be all crazy. But was that part of what made you just kind of like, I'm gonna go to LA and I'm gonna fucking try it? Was it that kind of mindset?
I feel like I've been like really intentional like my whole career, right? So like when I was younger, it's like I gotta go to Hollywood, I gotta go to LA, and I ended up going, you know, to like where the money was. Like I got a scholarship to go to college, you know, to do track in Ohio. So I ended up going to Ohio. Then went back to Michigan. I spent time with some family, and then decide where I was gonna go from there. And it's like I really wanted to go to, like, I gotta go to LA, but you can go to New York or LA. And I had a friend that went to New York first. Like, well, if you come to New York, you know, you got a job, I can get you this job, and like, you know, we can like be roommates together. And I was like, you know what? Let me go there first and give it a shot and, you know, see what I can, you know, learn about myself and generate there. And then in like 2 years, I'll go to Hollywood. So I've always been in my mind, and it, you know, for one reason or another, like I just haven't kind of made my way over there. But I got to New York, I think it was for the best, because you really learn how to hustle. And like, I just, the best way to say it, like you learn how to like make opportunities, find opportunities, patchwork things together, like how to survive, you know, which is, I think, something you need to do. You learn like really quickly, like what's real and what's not, like who's, you know, who's messing with you. Like you just, it's a really good like education place. I'm like, learn like who you are, how you are, and where you need to grow. I feel like that's where New York really taught me. Then it has really good like training, you know, programs. So it's like the William Master Studios, that was great. But then it also had these opportunities for like workshops. I just felt like where I could connect with casting directors and people who wanted to talk about the business side of acting, right? Like it really is a commerce thing and a craft thing. So I was spending a lot of time working on the craft, which I felt like I needed to really connect with like, who am I? What am I? What do I want to work on? And then I needed to understand like the industry and the commercial side. And I just felt like I got a lot of education without the risk of employment attached to it while I was in New York, right? So it's like, I got opportunities to be a reader for casting directors. So I got an understanding of like how casting decisions were made. I read books about that. There were like workshops on how to like, you know, set up and be organized, how to organize your business as an actor, how to market yourself. So like there was just this big understanding of the business side that I feel like I was able to get while I was in New York. And then while I was there, you know, I was like, I'm going to learn each kind of pathway of, you know, how to be a paid actor here. Right. Yeah. So it's like, I went the non-union background work because I just want to be on a set and see like what goes on there.
Yeah, that was,
and I was like, I don't like being non-union. Like rough. I want to be in a union. If I'm going to be doing this, let me get that union money and these benefits. So it's like, how do you join the union? Which is like, you know, being on set, I got answers to that. Like just, again, like doing the thing helped inform the next thing. Right. So it's like, okay, I learned, you know, stand-in work. Okay. Stand-in work helps you like join the union, get enough money to like join you to do that. Having the conversations, you know, with other people, watching the actors and the directors have their conversations on set.
Yeah. That was a huge thing. Yeah. You learned so much just watching that. Like, people get weird when like you're kind of like creeping on that, but I didn't care. You know, I was like, I want
to. No, and it's like, as you, and it's like, look, your job as a stand-in is to pay attention to what's going on, so you can do it when, you know, they step off. So it's like, I'm just soaking it up, right? And then in that time I was there, like, again, I'm talking to people who have been in the industry for a long time at various stages. And like, you know, this one guy who had been doing background for a long time, like, if you want to keep working and, you know, stay on set, they always need, you know, cops. So you can get a cop uniform, you get a pay bump for having this cop uniform, and you are going to consistently get called. And I was like, you're right. So I, you know, learned how to get a police uniform, had a uniform. Then it's like, now, business wise, I'm getting clips, images of myself in a police uniform. And it's like, I want to be a series regular on Orange is the New Black. To make that happen, I need to know who is the casting director for that, and then I need to show that I can do that. I can show that I can be a cop. Here I am getting paid to practice.
Right.
On set, getting paid to be in uniform and, like, you know, your background, as long as you're not, like, stealing the focus of the camera, like, you can do whatever you want. So I'm making up, like, scenarios, and I'm acting out different cops. So I spent, like, 14 hours rehearsal while I'm getting paid. And then now I know who the casting director is. Now I have a picture of myself in this uniform. I'm going to, like, you know, hey, cast director, this is me. I want to, you know, whatever. And then they call me for something else. I end up getting on Girls with the same casting office, but now I'm on Girls as a cop. So now I have this, you know, so I have a co-star role, like, as a cop. which is great. And now because I had a co-star Rosa Capo on this show, now on the next show, you know, it just kind of snowballed. So I'm getting more and more and more roles, and I'm getting like larger like roles. But now as I'm kind of been in New York for a while, I'm noticing myself as I'm using my own like log. It's like I'm seeing that I'm only getting seen for this level of roles here in this town.
Yeah.
And I feel that because of the practice that I've had, not just, you know, when I have on screen stuff, but it's like I'm just doing a lot of plays, I was doing a lot of theaters, I felt like I was still doing my master classes. I'm like, my capacity has grown, but the opportunities are not. I don't think they see me for that right now in this market. But I feel like if I went to another market at this juncture and just connected with other people who I'm new to, I think I would have a different experience. So that's where I was at when it came time to like New York. I felt ready. I did some guest star roles. I had a recurring role. I had a lot of co-star roles. And I just was looking around and like, what's coming in for me? And even though like these people are like, we're fans, you're like, you're still not, but you're not calling me in for this level of role yet.
Yeah.
You're not calling me in for this level yet. So, yeah. You know, or maybe you are, but nobody's, but the producers around you don't believe it. So there, I think there have been casting directors who are like, we really believe in you. We're pushing you. But I'm not seeing that on my log. So I'm like,
right.
I think there's a time to go. And like, I don't know that much about LA, but if I just put my boots on the ground there and just stay there for a little bit of time, I'm going to figure some things out and then I can come back and then, you know, do whatever. But when I came, I had like, I think my marketing materials are right. I had enough credits at that point that were like, right. I just finished working on a play for 3 months in Portland. So my performance capacity was like, you know, I was just primed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I got there in this new market, this new person, and I was able to like go in and meet for this reading in person. So I think everything kind of lined up, but they lined up because I would have been intentionally working towards that, you know.
From
where you know, like this like also, where like preparation and opportunity connect. So it's like, yeah. I felt like I was prepared and then the opportunity presented itself and I was able to kind of like break through.
From what I understand also is that when a really prepared, really ready to go New York actor lands in LA and like people freak the fuck out when we enter rooms because mm-hmm. I think we have a specific energy in the way that we hold ourselves and like, you know, like just coming from here, you know, like and doing a lot of theater and like having to do all that stuff and just like being a lot of the times not mean, but no, like there's not a lot of bullshit in here. Like it's like mm-hmm. this is who I am, this is what I'm looking for, this is what I can offer this show or this movie, or I can offer you, and I'm gonna be really awesome at it, and that's it. Like I'm not gonna be fake or strange or whatever else people are like. It's just like this is who the fuck I am, and you can fucking take it or leave it. And people really respond to that. They respond to it very, very well. So it's not surprising, dude. Like it's true. Like the work that you were doing when we were doing our show was fucking phenomenal. So it's not surprising that you are where you are now. I mean, and also watching you do the work on 9-9-1-1-1 is amazing, but also like watching you in Queen Sugar was so fucking good, man. Like just so grounded in a different reality of a world that allowed you to just like breathe through that shit, man. Like you were like a smaller energy, but god damn it, man, like you were like it blew out of the screen. Like it was so awesome to see you do that work, and I was I was so cool that people got to see you do that work because I've seen that before because we did so many workshops together. Mm-hmm. So yeah
and I was like, it's, I tell you the benefit of like strong writing, like I had always loved I saw Selma in 2014 at one of these like SAG screenings, and like I was just blown away by like the storytelling in it, you know, like, you know, I've seen a lot of like movies and we grew up learning about like Martin Luther King, but there was something about like the way the story of the whole like movement and like Martin Luther King's it was like another like a three-dimensional portrayal of like of him and his and like his experience and just that particular area of like the boy. Like, this is like this. It was like, oh man, it really spoke to me. And then it was a talk back between Ava DuVernay and David Oyelowo, and like just their dynamic and like how they. I was like, that's the kind of work I want to like be doing. I love this like woman. How she's doing? Like, went up to her. I'm like, you know, the story is like so great. And she was so gracious, and I'm like, I really want to work with you. You know, at some point, she's like, you know, great. You know, keep it up. And so when I heard that she was behind this show, Queen Sugar's like, I want to be on this show. And like, I'm telling my team, like, I want to be on this show. And they're like, oh, okay. I was like, no, I want to be on this show. And I didn't care, like, you know, I was going to be on it. But like, you know, they're like, I don't know what they were thinking at the time. But it was just like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, I'm telling you, like, I kept sending them stuff. I'm like, I really want to be on the show. There's just something, again, like so potent about how deeply nuanced each of the characters are. In a way that you just don't get to see that many black characters like portrayed on screen. Like, I mean, like black stories portrayed on screen. And then also it's very much like theater in that it's not fast paced cuts, this, that, and the third. It's like the way in which it's written, I think too, because it just plays into like the show. It's like takes place in Louisiana and has this like the Southern, like, you really can like breathe through each scene. Like, they're not going to rush through. Like, they let each moment like live. And then because the writing's so strong, like you just connect with it in a way that you can just like fully, completely like live it out. So like,
yeah,
I just,
they would you sit know, I'd that be a, camera right on you, man. And they just let you live. Let yeah. It was beautiful. Yeah. Like those quiet moments of you just looking, just God, just, you don't get that a lot as an actor. You don't get to just sit in a moment and just live in that moment. Mm-hmm. Such a gift.
Yeah. Yeah. It was wonderful to like be able to be a part of that show. And then to be able to play a trans character in this world. Like, I was just down to just be anyone in here, but like, here's this trans character. Here's this trans male character who's having this dynamic conversation with his friend in which he's expressing gratitude.
Yeah.
And in which he's the one who is being asked for support and advice, as opposed to the other way around, where right. She was like, please accept me, please, you know, whatever. And it's like, what? No. He was like, hey, brother, can you help me out? And I had some advice to offer him, which is like, what a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful scene, because that's true. Like, there's so much that because of our experiences, like trans people.
Sorry, Brian.
No, you're honest. It's like that we could offer insight on that no one thinks that they like to ask us or like to listen to us when we tell you, because like we've done a lot of the heavy lifting and soul searching and investigation and self-actualization that a lot of people don't do yet, or they're like on the precipice of, or they have to be in a crisis to really do, or they get like really late in life. And it's like, we're going through this in like our teens and our 20s,
right?
So it's like,
happens right away.
We can talk to you about a lot of stuff if you're willing to like listen. So like to be able to do that on the show again through the work was phenomenal.
That's great. Let's talk about 9-1-1. You know, mm-hmm. like it's your largest body of work so far. You're going to have much larger things and much more awesome things coming soon. Not that I know anything that's like a secret. I just know in my heart that it's fucking coming. But this is quite a prolific 5-season every episode character. I can imagine, I mean, I know how taxing that is, and like how much time that takes, and also like when you're doing all the promo and all the interviews and all that stuff. Was it always just like a magical dream come true, or were there hard moments, or you know, stuff like that?
It was more of a dream come true, even with the moments with that were hard, like, moments, you know, yeah. Tired. Yeah, because it truly was. Like, I wasn't necessarily my journal, but like I was setting my goals on, like, I ended up using a spreadsheet. Like, what are my goals? And then what are the milestones to reach that goal? And like, what are the steps and the tasks I'm going to take to reach that goal? Like, one of my ultimate goals, you know, was like, I want to work on as a series regular on a TV show, films in New York, as a trans masculine character in a strong ensemble, so I can learn from the other people, but also like hold my own. Like, that's verbatim what the quote was.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted, you know? And like, and it was, I wrote it in 2017. And then like in 2019, it was like, that's kind of what happened. And that's what happened. Like I was like, I booked the L word and like it hit that. And then I was working on the L word. I was talking to a friend and like, I was like, I'm really enjoying a lot about working on this show, but I really want to be a series record. I was recurring and like, there was so much storytelling that in life for my character that was happening off screen. I was like, I really want to be able to like live this out. And I want to come to work every day. And I really want to work on a character over time, like in this capacity. And like, I you know, the character I'm playing on the L word is kind of like, he's a button up guy. He says he has a lot going on in his inner world, but he doesn't say a lot. And it's like, and he wears suits and it's like, he's buttoned up. Like, that's his character. I think it was really like buttoned up and fastidious was his breakdown. I was like, no, I want to play someone physical. Like, I love procedurals. Like, you know, and so I like wrote this down. Like, I want a procedural where I'm playing like a cop or a firefighter, you know.
Yeah.
And like, you know, that's exactly what happened, you know? So I'm like, oh my God. So every step in the process that I was going through, I was like, oh my God. You know, like, this is exactly what I want. Like, I don't care. Like, you know, and then like, you book a series regular, and then there's like a clause in the contract that you sign where it's like, you know, they can replace you up until like the second episode. So even while I was there, I'm like, I'm just happy to be here. You know, like I'm going to do my work for sure. I'm just happy to be here and like whatever. So even after that like threshold like passed, I'm like, every day I was like, I'm just happy to be. I'm getting paid. I would do this for free. You know?
Yeah.
Like, truly, I would, you know, so it felt like that. So even on the days where it's like, you know, we got like a 4 a.m. call time and we're like getting drenched and it's like, you know, canyon cold out here, 48 degrees, and we're like in soaking wet clothes, like, I don't care. Like, this is exactly what I want. I don't want to be anywhere else, you know?
Right. Did anyone ever make funny? So like, I'm like that too. And I used to get made fun of all the time when I was on the tick because I was like optimism guy. Like, I was like, I'm so happy to be here all the time. This is great. Mm-hmm. But I mean it. And like, some of the people that have been in the industry for a while that are a lot more jaded, they would make fun of me. And, you know, like I'm still like friendly with them, but I don't know if I'll ever get to the place where I'll be that way. I am so fucking happy to be here all the time. Even when it's hard, it's fucking awesome. I totally, I 100% agree with that shit, man. Like, I get it, you know, like shit's hard. Your shit gets canceled all the time and you like have to kind of have to like keep a skin on that's really thick. But at the same time, like if you lose the joy of what brought you here, go do something else. Go.
You got to. Listen to yourself. It's like, that's yourself telling you something. Like, if you're don't want to be somewhere and you're like frustrated and it feels like hard to go to work and you just like, you can't find the joy, then it's like, yeah, listen, honor yourself. Something about this ain't working anymore. And that's fine. You've grown, you've changed, you shifted. Like, honor the shift, you know?
I totally agree. That's absolutely true. So, when did you start working with the Human Rights campaign? I mean, I know, but this is for the audience.
It was what, 2021? Like, you know, again, like I feel like as an artist, as an individual, there's only so much that I can do.
Sure.
To bring about change for other people or have an impact. So like, I try. Like, I'll have conversations, you know, with people. Again, anything that helps people self-actualize, become their whole self on their own like independent journey, or like help them understand something that I can tell that they don't quite understand, and maybe making decisions that make life harder for other people. It's like I will session with you if I think that clarity will help create some openness in like how we're living and like spread joy and spread love. Like, I will have one-on-one conversations and I see the value and the power of that, you know, again, like just working with the young people in the center. Even if it's not even a conversation about like some big heavy issue, sometimes just talking kindly to somebody or really listening to somebody, like what they're going through, I know what that can do as an individual. And then there's things that are happening that it's like, I don't think you are aware of this because of you're insulated in your own community. Let me make you aware of it. I can talk to you about it. Then it's like, as an artist, I have this ability to do that in my work. So I can do this as the characters that I play and the stories that I decide to be involved in. I can try to have an impact that can help change hearts and minds to again allow for love to be spread and understanding to be spread, and for us to like make life better for other people, and like again honor who you are, and like, you know, give you permission to be your fullest self. If I'm being my fullest self, my character's being their fullest self, maybe it gives you permission to be your fullest self.
So are you one of their you're one of their ambassadors?
I'm on the board of directors.
Your board of directors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I was thinking of was like, there's things happening. There's all these laws being passed. There's things that are going on like outside of my control that I want to have a bigger impact on. And I'm like, I want to join an organization that I feel like is doing that. And HRC has been one that I've always been aware of. And that, like, I feel like they're present in communities, you know, like all throughout the United States, and that they have a way of doing things on a legislative level that I can't necessarily do. So like, you know, just like you have like lobbyists, you know, going and like petitioning for big companies, you have people from HRC talking to people about issues that matter to, you know, people who are LGBTQ plus, and making sure that what's going on in our communities and what we need are is like being talked about in the Capitol, you know what I mean? And letting the community know like what bills are up that are going against the community so that we can call our people and do things. So I'm like, oh, this is great. So someone had reached out to me about like, have you ever thought about being on a board? And I was like, I don't know what that entails. Can you tell me more about that? And they told me, I was like, yes, you know, especially for an organization that had historically, you know, for the board of directors have been mostly, you know, white, gay, cisgendered, you know, like males. Or just people who are LGB, they were like, we want more trans, we want more people of color on here to sort of speak to those things. And I'm like, absolutely. So I joined the board of directors in 2021.
That's great. And what have you worked on with them?
Helping inform people of what's happening on the legislative level, like what's going on, like with the bills that are being proposed and passed, and like sharing information about that. What senators, what governors, what other like state officials or, you know, federal officials are LGBTQ plus or LGBTQ plus allies or affirming who are running, and like informing people on how to vote for that, doing voter drives. We host fundraising dinners for the programming that HRC does. So like bringing people to the dinners to, you know, learn about HRC and like what community programs are going on, like volunteering at community events that HRC has. Yeah, you know, again, what's really great about it is they're in all 50 states. Some people may not know that they have access to like resources. You know, they have resources for, you know, people who want to go to college. They have partnerships with HBCUs. They have partnerships with community organizations. And like, again, like getting information out to people about like what's available to them or how they can participate in protecting our rights, you know?
Yeah, man, that's really important. Like especially now more than ever. And I know that like it feels like every couple of years that's what we say now more than ever we need to X, Y, and Z. But seriously, now more than ever, it's a thing that we really need to do. And the thing with like trans and queer people specifically is that if people that are not that don't know what that's about or know what people like that are like, it's very easy to just have a conversation with somebody and you'll quickly come to realize that there's a universalism to all of us because we're all part of the same human family and there is no big differences. We're the fucking same people. And the fear that is being instilled in people is not only extremely dangerous, but it's also incredibly sad and doesn't do our society any service. And it never has. So it's incredible that you are doing this work with this organization and that you're using your platform to speak this positivity into the universe. It's not a surprise to me, but I mean, it is beautiful that you are doing it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's really wild to see how many people fail to make the connection that what happens to one of us affects all of us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like this false sense of security that like, oh, well, that's happening to them over there. And then telling yourself like, oh, well, they kind of probably deserve it because X, Y, and Z, because that kind of absolves you from having to do anything about it, having to like sacrifice your sense of like comfort and wholeness to help somebody else. But it's like when you do things like that, when you loosen up laws and when you kind of attack the Constitution and the protections because you think it'll take away from one group, it's like you've opened the door for it to affect you in ways that you didn't think about. So it's like if you let this happen, if you let one other group of people's like rights get stripped away, there's nothing to really stop your rights from also being stripped away.
Yeah, you're next. There's no way around that.
And people really fail to make that connection because they fall for this sense of separation and otherness, you know, based on whatever you want it to be, whether it's like skin color or whether it's orientation or whatever. It's like whatever, it doesn't matter. When it comes to governance, when it comes to like legalities, it's like, again, you open the door to like take away your own rights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To like make your life harder, you know, to make your access to medical care for you harder. If they can say that these people don't deserve access to medical care, then they're going to say that people with pre-existing conditions don't deserve access to this. They're going to say that people, you know, who weigh a certain amount can't have access to this health care. Like there's no limit because you've now set a legal precedent to say no, and it's okay.
And also, like, are you just going to have, you're just going to be cool with like some person looking at your kid's genitalia when they need to go to the bathroom every day?
They're not thinking that through. You know, it's like, you know, people who may be like really tall for their age. I know girls who like have facial hair and like, you know, you don't know what the criteria is. It's not clear, right?
Right.
And so the only way to check, you know, if somebody is whatever they say they are, it's like you've now opened the door with like, well, they need to check. And it's like, so they can look at you because, you know, for some boogeyman, it's like, you know,
I don't want anybody looking at my kids under areas. Like,
I don't want anybody looking at my under areas. It's like,
yeah, well, I don't want nobody to look at me.
Right. And for what?
For what reason?
For a problem that doesn't actually
exist. It doesn't exist. Like, people are going in the bathroom to go pee and take a shit or whatever the fuck. They're not going in there. No one's hiding in the bathroom to fucking rape you all the, I mean, maybe some people are, but they're not trans people. You know, like.
And the thing is, it's like, you know, I don't think people realize like what it takes. Like, if you want to just go in the bathroom to harass somebody, you're going to just go in the bathroom to harass somebody. You're not necessarily going to subject yourself to all that it takes to transition. To navigate this, like, right? Like, think about how people are treated when they talk about this, when they come out. Like, you know, people deal with a lot of pushback. They deal with a lot of discrimination. They deal with a lot of alienation. Who's willing to do that? Just
in order to do that, yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Or like when it comes to like sports, like people get made fun of for just seeming a little bit different, right? Do you really think that, you know, someone who considers, you know, identifies as male is going to go through all of the ridicule and the, you know, to change themselves just to win, you know, a state championship?
I know.
Like, if they even win, like, to what end? Like,
it's when you actually talk through it, it is the most ridiculous argument. And the responses that you get back are usually more just word fucking salad nonsense shit where it's like, logically think through this. It's fucking Occam's razor, right? Like, why? What is the reason this is happening? It is not because of all the nine other fucking things that you just said. It's this person is becoming who they actually are. That is the easiest answer, and that means that it is the correct answer, right? So no one stopped you from being who you really are as a person. No one ever said, fuck you, you can't be who you are. Why?
Well, maybe they did, and now you're taking it out on other people.
Maybe, you know what I mean? But at the same time, you know what I mean? Like, Like, no one has ever told me that I, when I told them who I was, that I'm not that, right? Like, never ever in my life. I've gotten made fun of. I've for being too big or being too poor or having a fucking stutter or all the other things that I've gotten made fun of for in my life. But when I told somebody that I was a guy, no one ever said that I wasn't, right? Mm-hmm. So why would you tell someone that they're not what they tell you they are? What the fuck does that do for you, for anybody, right?
Like, I mean, it's not much, but again, if you don't have a sense of who you are on your own, sometimes people being fully themselves feels like a threat to you.
Yes.
So if your sense of self is really externalized, that's a really destabilizing thing, right?
Right.
So if your sense of what it means to be a man is this really fragile kind of thing that you maybe got pushed into, and like anything that's a deviation outside of that, like you got ridiculed for, you got, you know, harmed for, like you don't, you may not even be conscious of it, but you got really policed into believing like there's only this way to be. When you see somebody else being not that, it feels like an affront to you.
Yeah.
Or it feels like you're freer than me. And I don't like that because I had to clip my wings. I had to kill these parts of myself. You know what I mean? So yeah. When you see somebody who's refusing to do that, it could be triggering for some people. And it's not a justification, but it's like something to think about. What, when you ask that question, like Jimmy asked, what is it about this person being fully who they are in this way bothers you so much?
Right.
And it's like, you take your time and figure that out, because so much of what you're reacting to is you're projecting onto them. They're just being themselves.
Yeah.
They're just being. So everything in life is a reflection of your internal world. So it's like, what are you putting on that person who's just going to get a ham sandwich? You know what I mean? True. What is it? What is it about that person, that being that way, that is bothering you so much? And it has nothing to do with them. It's you.
It's you. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
You are, you're, I love how wide open and empathetic you are. I've become a little bit more like, fuck you to people. But like, you're right. I should try and see what is making people so upset, and maybe try to talk them through it in that way versus kind of like, you're a dick and should go away. But yeah,
because I mean, that's what think about it, that's what they're doing the other way around. So
sure.
If you're going, you're a dick and you should go away, I don't want to hear anything you have to say, fuck you, you're wrong. That's literally what they're doing to you or doing to me. They're going, you're wrong. You shouldn't be like that. You shouldn't be like that. You know, fuck you. You don't deserve the same rights. And so it's like, I can't do it. It's not going to get me anywhere. You know what I mean? So it's like, let me figure out for myself, what is it about that person that's giving me a response? If it's that person that's giving me a response, what is it about their behavior that's giving me a response? And that's something else.
Yeah.
It's you actively advocating for me to not have access to my medical care. I have a problem with that. You know what I mean? And I'm going to deal with that problem. Yeah. You know what I mean? As opposed to like, you're an idiot. And that's me. That's my judgment on them that has closed the door to like any kind of sense of understanding. And if it's blocked in that way, it's certainly going to be blocked in this way. We're not going to get nowhere. You know what I mean?
So what would your advice be to folks that do that and they do it more than once with the same person and it just not working? It's just kind of like constantly getting pushed back. Do you just keep trying, or do you have to eventually walk away?
Like, am I going to have an argument with somebody who doesn't see eye to eye with me?
Sure. Like if you're trying to come to an understanding to why a person is acting in that way, and you engage them in conversation about it more than twice, and you don't get anywhere, do you walk away or do you keep trying?
It depends. It depends on like what the relationship is and like what I need from them, or are they in the way of my being, right?
Sure.
So yeah, like if they are in the way of my being, my whole self, then it's like, I got to deal with you until you make some change here. They're in the way of like being, allowing like other people that I care about to be. And it's like, I got to deal with you until you get this, or I got to get you out of the way. You know what I mean? But yeah, if you're just a person with opinion that you're holding on to more dearly than like the reality, and like and I'm like, hey, I'm just reflecting back, like you're having a reaction that is your reaction. Why are you having that reaction? You should think about your reaction. I'm not even gonna argue with you, because this isn't a persuasive conversation. There's no fact that I can give you when you've identified yourself with a belief. Your identity is tied to this belief. All I can do is just get you to see, like, you're identifying with a belief. You're holding on to it so much, you can't see any other things here.
Right.
You should look at that. And I'm going to go about my business.
Yeah.
You need to deal with that. I'm not your therapist. You know what I mean? And again, if you're not stopping my way of being, if you're not stopping other people's way of being, it's like, that's your work. And I did my job as a human by reflecting back. Like, hey, you should look at that.
All right. Yeah, that's true. Cool. All right, yeah. So we are over an hour now, man. Like this went really fast. So let me pull one question from the audience, and then we can be on our way. So I got one from a drama teacher who is asking, "What is the dream role that you want in your career?"
The dream role that I want in my career. I don't have like a singular dream role, but right now I'm really interested, and I've been doing small versions of what I want as I kind of prepare myself for the bigger version. I really grew up watching a lot of action movies and TV shows, and that really helped form like my identity. And like a lot of the questions that the characters ask themselves, or that the situation they're in, like ask them, you know, I'm really fascinated by, right? So I really want to play a character in an action movie who has to make a decision about what kind of person he has to be and step from the ordinary into the extraordinary. You know, so any role that allows me to do that physically, that's what I'm looking to do. So I've been making some short films that, you know, have been iterations of that. And I just want to keep exploring that in different ways as my projects get bigger and bigger.
Awesome. Do you have anything coming out now that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I got a short film called Deep Dish Dimples that's coming out. It's going to be preparing at the Slam Dance Film Festival. I'm really, really excited about that. That's going to be February 25th here at the DGA in Los Angeles. And the filmmakers have submitted it to a bunch of other film festivals. So as it kind of gets picked up and, you know, shows more around the country, hopefully more people can see that. And I'm doing a staged reading of a Streetcar Named Desire here in LA as well. So that should be fun. Get to put my Stanley hat on, you know. And
then, oh, hell yeah, man. That's going to be sick.
Baby. Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be great. That's
March 6th at the Elysian Theater here at 9:30 in LA.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Anything that you've like booked or anything coming up that you can talk about?
Not that I can talk about, you know. I just keep looking out, keep your eye on the prize, and you'll be seeing me shortly.
We will all be waiting with bated breath to see what you do next. dude, I really appreciate you being on the show, sharing your story, being so open, speaking about everything. It means a lot.
Hey, man, thank you for making space and bringing me into it, brother.
Absolutely, and I'll speak to you soon, man. Thank you so much.
No doubt.
Bye. All right, everybody, thank you so much for being here this evening. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I do and did. Brian Michael is an awesome guy, and I'm so happy that he came on the show. Once again, we are sponsored by Lucas Roasting Company. You can take 15% off your first order with the code the live stream live. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you are watching on Instagram, thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. And you can follow Brian on his Instagram account, which is linked underneath all these videos, or if you're on Instagram, he's like going to be like a collaborator on all these posts. So you'll be able to find him that way. Thank you for being here, and I'll see you next time on the live stream live. Mwah. End stream.